Wake up, Coastal Carolina. Wake up. This is your CCTA Wake Up Call.
Produced by the Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to the preservation of the U.S. Constitution, free enterprise, and individual liberty.
Good morning, Coastal Carolina, and welcome to CCTA Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Rick Hopkins. Again, this morning, we're at Fernwood Studios with Hal and Rainer James, and we had such a good time last time with you guys. We invited Jerry Egolf and Kim Fink back, our education experts. And Kim, last year, the College Board, the nonprofit organization that writes, administers, and grades the Scholastic Aptitude Test, as well as the 30-plus advanced placement courses for high school students taking college-level classes for college credit, replaced its 5-page topical U.S. history course outline with a 134-page APUSH framework. First of all, can you explain to us what APUSH is and what's wrong with it?
APUSH stands for Advanced Placement U.S. History, and it went from a 5-page framework that was based on time periods to an agenda-based framework. It is all about social and identity conflict. It's about social justice. It's about subjugation. We have no heroes. Our founders were not exceptional. They were to be ashamed of. They were, they commandeered not just the lands, but the people, all greed, profit motive. Anything negative that you could think about the country is what they accent on, and they don't do it in a way that we would have considered reading from a textbook and having questions. They determine what a key concept is that's important for these students to know, and then your job as the teacher and the student is to come up with the resources that prove the conclusion.
All right.
So I know tell you what the facts are, right?
Right.
Some of the experts say they label it as a cynical, limited, and negative view of the United States history.
I'll give you an example.
I was going to do that.
Go ahead.
One example here is from the Heartland Institute. Says the framework conveys a consistently negative view of the nation's past, citing the colonial America units, stressing the development of a rigid racial hierarchy, and a strong belief in British racial and cultural superiority. They also point to the dismissal of the Declaration of Independence, adding the framework's entire discussion of this seminal document consists of just one phrase in one sentence. The colonists' belief in superiority of Republican self-government based on the natural rights of the people found its clearest American expression in Thomas Paine's Common Sense and in the Declaration of Independence. So they are rewriting history is what
Absolutely.
They're doing to fit their agenda.
Well, the example I was going to use that really gets to me is when they talk about America's involvement in World War II, and they talk about the bombings in Nagasaki and Hiroshima and have made Americans, present-day Americans, look back and question America's values. And, you know, I'm old enough to remember that, and it really does, it really gets to me because I had several uncles overseas. I remember watching the newsreels and my grandmother listening to shortwave radio and trying to figure out where her sons were and whether they were in grave danger at that moment or not. And then when the war was over, when the bombs were dropped, and within a few days it was announced that Japan had surrendered. And I mean to tell you, you talk about jubilation and celebration because we knew then that our soldiers wouldn't have to attack the Japan homeland or their islands like they had to do Iwo Jima and the Philippines and all of those places because they took such a toll on American lives and they would have taken a huge toll on Japanese lives as well. And to say that those things make us rethink our values. I mean, it just tears me up.
I think it's a really good way to rear homegrown terrorists by the dozens, maybe the thousands.
All right. Well, they portray post-World War II conservatism as being grounded in fear and belligerency. You know, that's the progressive attitude.
Right. Well, if you are looking at history, just recent history, because, you know, that's where we're living. And you would think, what would be an important event in our history recently? And I would think that the election of the first black president would be important, but it's not in AP history. And I contend it's because it's a success story. And wow, you can't have any success
right
stories.
Kim, you're right.
Well, their agenda is to point out America's greatest sins,
mm-hmm,
and what we've done wrong.
And creating a victim class.
Right.
Yes.
And they don't ever go back and tell you what we did to correct those wrongs.
No.
You know, they just want to dwell on the sins and the things that were black and negative in our history. Jerry, you want to weigh in on that?
Yes. I was sitting here thinking, listening to this. It's another good example of where we differ with the North Carolina education plan from Common Core and from APUSH. Many of these contemporary standards and courses are just that. They want to use contemporary information. They want to take history and put it in today's vernacular, in today's context. And you can't do that with history. Furthermore, you hear the words critical thinking a lot with Common Core, and it's really not critical thinking. It's a buzzword to them. To them, to the developers of Common Core, critical thinking is, yes, you look at an alternative answer, you look at an alternative solution, or you consider other information. But when they do that, they see an opportunity to take that negative approach instead of the history that we're used to learning. Now, granted, you know, there's all kind of cliches about history. History is written by the victors. History is written by the, you know, this, that, and the other. But history is still history.
Absolutely.
And so when you look at the Civil War or World War II or anything, it does have two sides. It has multiple facets. But those facets are to be looked at honestly,
mm-hmm,
you know, and weighed against where that information came from, who wrote it, things like that. And then the entire picture can develop for a student or for an adult even on what actually happened. Another facet of this is that by using the slanted point of view of history, they're not doing minorities any good. There is a lot of history that the minorities can be very proud of, even before they came to this country, as in one way or another. And I'm specifically maybe talking about the blacks. They came from Africa. Africa has a wonderful history. A wonderful history. Some of the civilizations in Africa back B.C., were almost as great or in some ways just as great as Egypt and the other major empires, you know, Carthage and so forth,
mm-hmm,
during the Roman era. In fact, some of the things that we credit the Egyptians with coming up with were actually done by some of those kingdoms, those monarchies in northern Africa. Instead of teaching that type of history to bring up, you know, to where they are now and lift the view of that up, it's all slavery. It's
right.
All this, it's all that. I think in order to fill those learning gaps, and this is another thing we're doing with the plan, is looking at history in a more complete manner. Yes, there was a bad time. You know, nobody today supports slavery, but it was very widespread in the world at one time.
Right, but there were many blacks here in this country that overcame that,
yes,
and achieved great things,
yes,
and
yes,
great discoveries, yeah, and progressed this country forward and was a
yeah,
very
we
important
we
part
advocate
of it.
Rather than just teaching them about the bad, you know, look at what you did. Look at what your ancestors did. I mean, we have ancestors. Why we teach minorities about the Greek cultures and the Roman cultures and stuff like that? It's important, but that's where we came from. They
right
didn't come from there. They came from a different culture.
Why not teach it all?
Yes.
World history,
yes,
not
right
Iceland.
Exactly.
How about factual history?
Yes, yeah, factual history.
Let me ask you something. Both of our sons are very, very history buffs.
Mm-hmm.
Our younger son is particularly interested in military history. And he says that he likes to read documents written at the time autobiographies, and mm-hmm. rather than biographies written by somebody else at a later time, letters home, mm-hmm. Contemporary diaries, while it was actually going on. It mm-hmm. is not through the lens of hindsight of any sort. Do you, in the North Carolina plan, use any references to original source documents rather than just telling people what happened?
Yes, we have, amongst our recommended reading, especially in the middle school and high school, we have letters from a soldier. It's letters from a Union soldier during the Civil War to his parents. We have some other letters that are in a collection that deal with both the North and the South during the Civil War. But we also, here again, there's a conundrum. If you take away from, it seems that the contemporary view is if you take away from American history, then you can fill it with foreign literature, foreign-based literature. Why not have a balance? You know, because that's what we're after anyway. We can have a nice selection of classical American literature mm-hmm. and balance that with both classical and contemporary literature from other countries. And when they do that, they typically pick up things like Marx and Lenin and others that were contemporaries in the political sense, mm-hmm. where they don't look to people like authors like Chimamanda Adichie or Akube Achebe in Africa and some of the others in Northern Africa and even in the Middle East. We've forgotten, I mean, to us, classic tales like Scheherazade and A Thousand Arabian Nights yeah. were wonderful. I mean, we all yes. read them as kids, yes. along with The Lord of the Rings and others. But they seem to have been lost now to us.
Well, we got to take a break here and hear from our sponsors. I can't wait to get back and hear some more of this. Welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call. Before the break, we were talking about A Push. And again, we have Kim Fink, chairman of our Public Education Committee, and Jerry Egolf with the North Carolina Education Coalition. And before we went to break, I mentioned the term factual history, and I want to tell you where I got that from. Looking at some of the excerpts from the course outlines, one of them, the course provides opportunities for students to identify and evaluate diverse historical interpretations. Now, when did factual history have multiple interpretations?
Well, you're missing their point. Their point is they've got to turn you from a thinker into a feeler.
Yeah,
because they can't make you feel guilty if you don't feel it.
But history should be based on, I mean, did Washington cross the Delaware or not?
Was he crying when
he did it? How many ways can you interpret that? Hal?
Well, you know, you've mentioned a number of times, Rick, that I've asked questions at the gun shows. A lot of times, usually, I started off talking to young boys because it is a knife and gun show, and I had a little prize knife that I could give as a prize, as long as it was approved by the parent there, then one was okay for the child that felt old enough to own a knife. And I usually ask questions like, can you name me a president who was president after George Washington, name one of the next three or four, and they usually can't do that of any age, just about.
Well, unless they're homeschooled.
Right. At the last gun show down in Jacksonville, there was a woman that was interested in winning one of those knives, and she, you know, a grown woman, and I said, you know, I'm going to ask you a harder question since you're young, if you want to win one of these knives. She said, yes, I want to try to win one of the knives. I said, okay, explain to me the difference between a republic form of government and a democracy. She couldn't do it. This woman was,
you know, you'd be surprised at how many people out there couldn't do it.
I don't know that our legislators could do that, because every time you hear them talk, they still say that our democratic society.
Well, it makes their skin crawl.
Some
you know,
of them
hair stand
up
on the back of my neck every time they say that. Our pledge says, "I pledge allegiance to the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands." And it's just flag of the United
well,
States.
Well, let me go to another excerpt here. In order to accomplish this goal, the AP U.S. History course lays out a set of clear learning objectives that are then assessed on the AP exam. To become proficient in these learning objectives, students will need to master the kinds of thinking skills used by historians in their study of the past and become familiar with contemporary scholarly perspectives on major issues in U.S. history.
That's in other totally words, rewriting history. Mm-hmm. It's their interpretation mm-hmm. of right. what happened.
Well, in other words, it says here, to pass the APUSH test, students must accept a false historical perceptive perspective or fail.
I've been saying that for 2 years.
And again, this is where they corrupt critical thinking. There are things taught, especially by the Foundation for Critical Thinking out in California, how to do historical reading. Historical reading, how teachers can teach history using critical thinking. Looking at other viewpoints and other things that were in play, events that were in play at the same time, is not necessarily or shouldn't be revisionist history, but that's what it turns out to be. And what happens is people that don't understand critical thinking may honestly think they're doing a good thing, but they're not. They're corrupting it into something that they feel, a conclusion that they feel warranted or that they want the students to have.
Well, let's take a quick break right here and we'll wrap this up when we come back. Welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call. Kim, I think you had a comment you wanted to make just before the break.
I think it's important that I remind everybody that the president of the College Board that produces these AP classes, as well as the GED and the ACT, is David Coleman. David Coleman was the chief architect of the English Language Arts portion of Common Core. So it's an aligned, progressive agenda.
Sure, yes, and much of the reading material in the appendices for the English Language Arts portion of Common Core has very, very negatively biased stuff in it.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, at those Education Standards Review Commission meetings, we've seen a lot of people come forward and talk about how they had to have more professional training, and we hear the one of the co-chairmen speak often of that it was the implementation that was the problem. And then we heard a very profound statement, I thought, by one of the members. What was the name? Somebody tell me. But the statement that I wanted to make is that if a standard is clear and concise enough, and that should be so that the teacher can thoroughly understand it, and it can be implemented by the teacher based on her understanding of the standard and not have to be unwrapped and unpacked and all this other stuff and professional training that they shouldn't have to go through.
That was Sandra Stotsky when she came and testified in front of the Academic Standards Review.
I'm glad you remember her name, because that was wonderful. But that was a very profound statement.
Yeah, in our presentation, Hal, on the North Carolina Education Plan, we have several examples where you have a paragraph of words about an operation or something a function you're supposed to do in math. And this is, you know, K-8 math, so it's elementary. And our standard and others makes it even stronger, and we use like one short sentence, divide by five. You know, it's ridiculous how many words they use to describe a simple thing, mm-hmm. a simple function, a simple action that the student is supposed to do in either math or in the language arts. It's just, you know, we can do, it was like the opposite. Well, a good example of the APUSH going from 5 to 124 pages or whatever, yeah. We went the opposite way. We didn't kill a bunch of trees or as many trees as the Common Core did, and yet we have a stronger standard, so go figure.
Yeah. You know what that reminds me of? A business analogy. The kind of things that are written up to present investments mm-hmm. have to have all the negative stuff. Mm-hmm. So they bury it in so many words that nobody will read it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, you've kind of followed an age-old practice. It's tried and true and proven. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the laws God laid down in 10 Commandments.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
The Declaration of Independence. Our Constitution. Mm-hmm. They weren't thousands of pages long.
Sure does.
You know? No,
now
strong.
Now you've got one law that covers hundreds or thousands of pages.
And I contend that's unconstitutional based on reading the Constitution when it says that no bill should be so arduous that you're unable to understand it.
Absolutely.
Folks may wonder, well, how can you have stronger standards when it's not as lengthy or it doesn't use as many descriptive words? Simply, is when the teachers develop their curriculum, it's not for them to talk. They're not standing up there talking about all this stuff. They set the stage, they set the parameters, and then it's up to the students with their guidance, the teacher's guidance, to find those facts, to interpret those facts, to find out on their own and do the research. You know, one of my favorite things is doing research. And I find that not a whole lot of people anymore can do research well.
Right.
And it's one of the things that I enjoy teaching very much. But most students don't know how to research.
Right. You also understand what the meaning of is. You don't have to explain it.
You just Google it.
Well, reading the Common Core Standards, to me, when I was reading them, it seemed to me that they were stating a fact, stating something as fact, whether it really was or not. Mm-hmm. And then they'd give the teacher several options for proving that.
That's right.
Whoa, what kind of critical thinking is that, Jared?
It's backwards, and that's what I when we did our presentation for the commission, I was asked a question by one of the commission members, and I said, well, typically what you do instead of the sound critical thinking is they give you an answer and then ask you to prove it a given way, and that's backwards.
Sure.
And she agreed. It was Mrs. Oxendine.
Oh, good.
Who's on the State Board of Education, by the way?
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's. Are cause and effect, mm-hmm. and here's one of the effects of all this, and that's something I read today. North Carolina homeschooling hits 100,000 enrollment milestone in North Carolina now.
Good news.
Some of the advocates argue that that's not true. It hit over 100,000 several years ago, and some of them, like the North Carolinians for Homeschool Education, estimate that there's over 170,000 homeschoolers in North Carolina. And that's clearly because parents have just gotten fed up with what's going on in the public education, and they are choosing to do that. But, you know, every parent can't make that choice. So, guys, what options do they, how can they help to make a difference in the public education system? Kim, I know you and Glenn attend school board meetings on a regular basis. Do you see a lot of parents there?
No. Usually, after the ribbons are handed out and the certificates are handed out, the audience is invited to leave. You know, they got to help their kids with homework, or it's bedtime or whatever. And then they have the public comment, which is after that. And typically, there'll be the few CCTA members there that are going to testify to the board. And everybody else there is typically staff.
Mm-hmm. That needs to change. Jerry, we got about a minute left. What do you think?
Yeah, I just wanted to... Parents' involvement is super important. Like we talked about last week, with the information that's being collected by the school boards and the school districts, it's important there. It's also important that parents get involved with their children's day-to-day education. I don't have the time to explain fully, but after some of our presentations, we usually get some emails like you do. And one mother wrote me an email that brought me to tears. And she said she lay awake sometimes at night crying because her children were coming home that unhappy about what they were experiencing in school. But she made the statement, this is my point. She said, please tell me that the North Carolina Education Plan will be installed for this next year, or at least part of it. She says, because if it's not, she says there are droves. She was already homeschooling her children. She said there will be droves of parents that she knows that will be pulling their kids out of school, out of public school.
I don't doubt that. Well, guys, again, we thank you for being with us today. You bring a wealth of information with you, and we so much appreciate that.
And a quick reminder that Tuesday, August 18th, will be CCTA's regular monthly public meeting. And it's going to be Grassroots North Carolina bringing us an update on Second Amendment legislation. See you next week.